Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome. My name is Denise Bowles, and thank you for joining us tonight. We are here with the Single Motherhood Coalition of Stand Up and Receive. Receive this empowerment, receive this education, receive this support. My guest tonight, my co-host tonight, I'm still very excited. These two dynamic women are back with me again. I have Evangeline Biddy, who is the founder and editor-in-chief of Junior Magazine, and I have Samantha A. Gregory, who is the founder of RichSingleMama.com. Ladies, thank you for coming back again. We had such a great show the last time. Thank you so much for coming back.
Great to be here.
Yeah. Now, I want to start off tonight with talking about our topic for tonight. We're going to talk about anger. Anger in the home, anger in a single-parent home, anger with the mom, anger with the son, anger with issues. This is something that's big, and I speak to a lot of parents, and many parents are saying how angry the household can get. So let's start off with you tonight, Van. What do you find in the household that contributes to this anger component?
Well, one of the biggest things, Denise, for me, and again, when I talk to mothers and interview mothers for the magazine, there is a conflict in why they had the children, and there's a conflict in what's going on between the parenting relationship between the mother and the father. If there was a divorce, there could be some unresolved issues in why the divorce happened. If the divorce was brought about by adultery, there could be obviously some anger issues there, some distrust issues there. And what's happening is that anger is being projected not just on the mate, but on the children, namely the son. Okay. The son looks just like the father, and the mother is kind of reenacting all of that bitterness. She doesn't have the husband in the home to project it on, so she projects that anger on the son.
Hmm.
So that's one issue that's taking place in the home. Another issue that's taking place in the home is many people specifically mothers who have not been married to the husband or to the father may be angry that the man rejected them by not choosing to marry them when a child came on the scene. And that is a very big issue. If a woman feels rejected by the person she had a child with, that can play out in the home, and the child and the mother begins to project that anger or that bitterness or resentment onto the child. And, of course, when that child sees that, he just feeds off of it, and he becomes angry, and the whole home is really a hotbed.
It's a hotbed. It's almost a boiling pot of crabs that are just waiting to jump out and just go everywhere. And
it's
It's
dynamite in the oven waiting to explode.
I've seen it happen. I've seen where mothers just, in the street, they will just use profanity, obscenities. They will just rattle off their anger and whatever's in their heart right there on that five-year-old, and you just stand there and say, wow.
Wham. Just like he doesn't even understand or comprehend what's going on. But I think, you know, if we're going to address this issue effectively this evening, we have to talk about the difference between being angry and being overwhelmed. Anyone can be overwhelmed. Single mothers, we're all overwhelmed, but it's a choice to be angry.
Mm-hmm.
So we can, if we're overwhelmed because of financial concerns, because of just time crunch, being pressured to be everywhere, every time, to be everything to everyone, it's okay to be overwhelmed, but it's how we respond to that. Some of us may need some more extreme care, like you talk about that in your book, some more self-care. I'm sorry, I meant self-care. Take a longer shower. Say, you know, this is mom's sanctuary. When I have the bathroom door closed and the shower's running, I don't care if I'm in there for an hour, don't knock on the door.
Right.
So those are the best practices that can help an overwhelmed mother stop from moving to anger, because that's where you don't want to be.
No, you don't want to be there. And I have to say, from my book, what I talk about in Raising Princes to Be Kings, A Single Black Mother's Guide to Raising Her Black Son, I talk about the anger of the self. That woman is angry at herself, ladies, because she made a wrong choice.
Yes.
She chose a man that did not live up to her expectations or did not give her what she needed. And now she's struggling with the child alone. As you said, she's been rejected. There's been trust issues that have been breached. And I find so many women are absolutely infuriated with themselves first and then the world and everything else second.
So the secret is, and I think you talked about it as well in your book, is forgiveness. If you are angry at yourself because of a poor decision, forgive yourself and acknowledge that you were in a place where you weren't capable of making the best choice. Forgive yourself and say, in the future, before I do X, I'm going to do X, Y, Z, and 1, 2, 3 first before I make that move. And you allow healing into your home and healing into your house when you make that decision. You're going to choose to forgive yourself and accept that this is the situation, and these are the steps that you're going to take, the action plan, to move out of that situation. But you're going to choose not to be angry, and you're going to choose not to let anger move into your home like an unwelcome guest.
Yes, that anger comes into resentment. It comes into the inability to listen. It comes into not being able to communicate well. It raises your blood pressure. It raises your heart rate. It gives you headaches, your stomach, you can't sleep. It contributes to so many factors, which is why it's important that mothers, single mothers, identify the source of that anger as soon as possible.
Now, I know we're going to bring some estimates to talk about money. Of course, a big stressor in a single-parent home, specifically a single mother, is money. And one of the ways that we can help get past that anger over money is acknowledge it and start having real conversations with our children, especially our older children who can comprehend a little bit more about this is where we are, that we're in the midst of the holiday season now. The media is bombarding our children with all kinds of messages saying, you got to have this, you need that, you need that. And as mothers, it is best sometimes to jump off of that roller coaster and say, this is going to be our budget for this year based on where we are as a family, and have a real conversation before the morning of December 5th, 25th comes, so that the expectation has been properly set, and this is how we're going to bring in this holiday season this year. I'm not saying it's going to be like this every year, but this year, because of the circumstances, this is what we're going to do.
Samantha, jump on in here. What's your take on this?
I absolutely agree with, especially around the Christmas season, setting a budget, making a decision before you go out and spend money, sit down and talk to your children about what the expectation is for the holiday, and not just for the holidays, but for, I mean, year-round. It's just really important to, like Van said, to talk to your children about the state of your financial affairs. They may not know all the details, but they can at least know and understand that we have possibly limited resources, and we can't have everything we want, you know. Mm-hmm. And even if you want certain things, then you should possibly put in place a system where they can earn money so that they can save and get the things that they do want. And that, of course, is teaching responsibility and taking some pressure off of you so that you won't think that you have to give them every little thing that they ask for, which can feed into the whole anger issue.
Yes, and it's just the matter of shopping and using coupons, doing price comparisons for sales, and using a layaway plan or even a Christmas club at your local bank would even help out. I know layaway is just a great way to put some of those toys and gifts aside and pay increments on them so that it is a little bit more manageable without using a big chunk of money.
Mm-hmm. And one strategy that I use in my family throughout the year and even at the holidays is eBay and secondhand shopping.
Mm-hmm.
Again, it is new to them.
Right.
And even to take it even farther as far as the true meaning of the holiday is what gift that you get last year that you're willing to give up now.
Right.
That you
want
to a charity or give to someone else or sell them on eBay or wherever to now you can have that $10 to put towards the next game that you want.
Right.
Those kinds of things, when we begin to have honest conversations with our children about the state of financial situations in our home, then we release that anger because they're not going to be surprised because they're not going to wake up on Christmas morning and expect there to be 300 gifts under the tree. The expectation is going to be set, and then we're not going to have that pressure for the next 25 days or the next however many days we have now to see, I got to make a miracle happen between now and December 24th.
Right.
And how enjoyable is your holiday going to be if you're stressed every minute trying to think, you know, what can I do to get another $50 to buy one more thing?
Right.
Exactly.
And that anger also comes into the relationship within the community. You know, we as single moms, we are basically two parents. We are the mother and the absentee dad, okay? We are both. And it means sometimes having to sacrifice having a social life, going out on social activities, or modifying the certain activities that we do go out and do socially. Like I see a lot of parents, a lot of single parents will stay in church, double service, triple service. They'll be in there for the entire weekend. That child is right there with them. They're cranky. They're tired. They've been sitting up in this suit for 6 or 8 or 9 hours. No homework has been addressed. The house is still dirty. And, you know, they're putting that extra tithe into the basket, which I'm not saying is wrong, but I'm saying that the mom has to pull back and take a good look at what she's doing, because I do think that contributes to the anger then.
Mm-hmm. Well, there's two angers we need to talk about. We need to talk about the mom anger. We need to talk about the child anger.
Right.
And we can address that probably later on in the show. You know, of course we know so many moms are angry for whatever reason. And, you know, we can't address the mom anger without addressing, again, there are so many different kinds of single moms out there. There are single moms, you know, because of death, because of divorce. There are single moms who've never been married. There are single moms with multiple fathers. And that creates such a stressor in the home. I grew up with a good friend of mine who spoke about her own stress when her sister's father would come to pick her up, and she had no one to come pick her up.
Wow.
How that created a conflict between everyone in the home. It created a conflict between her and her sister because she was jealous of her sister having this relationship with her father. It created a conflict between her and her mom because she wanted to know why didn't her dad come pick her up.
Mm-hmm.
So it's so many things that go on, and it's all these diversity of circumstances. You know, it has to be addressed, and you know, we're grateful to you because there's no other vehicle that will address the diversity of single moms.
No, and that anger linkage between mother and child is very, very important because the child is a mirror. He or she is going to reflect off of you.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're angry, if you're talking in a loud decibel of voice all the time, if you're shouting as a way of communicating, if you're using profanity as a way of constantly communicating, if you don't have good listening skills because you're so angry and so distracted, your child is going to mirror that exact behavior from you. So it's very important.
And I want to tell parents who do get angry, every single mother has raised her voice. Let's not, you know, make any mistake.
Oh, no.
has maybe used the word she later said, you know, I shouldn't have said that. But I'm sorry and I was wrong are good places for mothers to begin.
Ah, yes.
When I have had a situation where I have maybe come home or something has gone on and I have yelled when it was not appropriate, I have come back and said, you know what, I raised my voice or I said that because I was worried about this and I shouldn't have done that. I shouldn't have spoken to you like that. And that's a good way to bring peace back into the home and restore it in a way that children understand. Because children have fits too. So they understand that we have fits.
Absolutely. But in my parents' household, my parents were raised in a Southern Baptist home, and the words I'm sorry were never uttered.
Never uttered.
There was never an apology.
Great.
Apology to children, what for? So when I grew up, my mother made an effort to use the I'm sorry, and I consequently use I'm sorry to my son because I do make mistakes. I do act out of turn. Things do happen sometimes that are beyond my control, and it's very important to apologize and recognize that apologies are helpful. I have a lot of parents who tell me, you know what, you're right. I don't say I'm sorry enough.
Mm-hmm. I don't say that. If something comes up and I speak out of turn or I yelled, because sometimes we don't even know how angry we are until we go to see a task that hasn't been accomplished. My son's responsibility, his only responsibility, is to empty the trash can. And I will come home sometimes and the trash is overflowing, and I didn't even know how angry I was until I opened the bin and the trash is overflowing, and now I'm screaming, why do you take out the trash? And then I have to realize I'm not mad about the trash. Mm-hmm. I'm mad about three other things that happened before I even opened the door.
Right.
So when I do have that energy burst, and that's what I call it, an energy burst.
a burst of emotion.
I will say, you know, the trash should have been emptied. That is your responsibility. But I overreacted because this is what happened on the way in an age-appropriate fashion. I don't have to say this is what happened, you know, in every single detail.
Right. 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 Now, I don't know if either one of you ladies have seen the movie Gifted Hands, you know, the story of Ben Carson, the famous surgeon.
I did.
Okay. And if you see that one side there, you know, where mom is in the kitchen and she went and bought some school clothes. Okay, and he looked at these old man pants, as he called them, and he said,
yep.
I can't wear those to school. Okay, from a financial point, I understand what she was trying to do. She was really trying to make those dollars go as far as she could. Now, what do you think could have been done to circumvent that burst of anger that the son gave her because he was so frustrated at being broke chronically?
Yep. Denise, I have the perfect solution for this, and this is what I do with my son, particularly around tennis shoes, because just like every other young boy, you know, everybody wants the Nike, the Jordan, whatever. What I do is I go to the department store that I know when we need new shoes, and he knows when we need new shoes, and we say, well, this day we're going to go. I go the day before. I choose three or four things. I put them on hold that are in our price budget. And as we're going to the store, I tell him this is what our goal is to spend. And I give a range, not a dollar amount, because a range gives him more to work with, and I've already chosen some things. So the final decision is his to make out of the four choices. I find if we do that, it is more respectful to our young people, especially our preteens and our teens, who are bombarded and pressured at school to fit in. And
right.
Let's face it, a big part of those preteen and teen years, they're trying to fit in. They want to wear the shoes, the clothes, the this that every other kid is wearing. They don't want to be the outcast. And as a mom, we don't want to restrict them and say, you're the outcast because we don't have the money. And
right.
I find that very, very workable best choice or best practice for my son and I, that I know that our budget may be $50 or $60 for a pair of shoes. And, of course, when you walk into the store, what they have in front all the time is a $250 pair of shoes.
Oh, no doubt. Absolutely.
Around, I make a decision because I work with the sales girls beforehand. I said, I want to pick out this, this, and this. And, again, the final decision is his to make. So whenever he goes to school within the next day, he knows I picked out this pair. Now, I did limit the choices because this is what our budget allowed, but he gets the final choice in that. And I did see that scene, and I was heartbroken both ways because I understood what that boy was doing. He's trying to fit in a school system that he was already an outcast.
Right.
And many of us, our children go to schools where there may be only one or two or three other black boys in the same school or in the same classroom. So there is a hunger to fit in. And it's a hunger to fit in on both their part and ours. We don't want them to be the outcast. We don't want
right.
them to be the other who doesn't have.
Mm-hmm.
But that's a great best practice that I recommend for a lot of parents, and I know Samantha has some great financial tips, but you know what you can afford. I know for me a $250 pair of sneakers is not a part of our lifestyle at this juncture.
That's right.
Exactly.
Now, Samantha, what other cues or what other tips to alleviate that scenario would you incorporate?
I think communication.
Okay.
The big thing about money, about, like Van said, the amount of money you have to spend, of course, $250, this is not in the budget. This is not what we're going to be doing.
Right.
And just encouraging them to look at, within this range, what kind of shoe you can get, what kind of clothes you can get. I encourage my daughter, going back to the secondhand stores.
Yes.
Jeans. Blue jeans are secondhand blue jeans. To me, the better, the more used they are, the better they fit. So,
right.
You know, it just depends. And so I tell her, so we can get some jeans at maybe a secondhand store and we can buy new tops for you.
Some of those secondhand stores, though, Samantha, are items that are discontinued, so price tags are still
right.
on some of those things,
exactly.
aren't they?
Exactly.
Okay.
The same way.
Yeah.
Then,
so go ahead, Samantha. I'm sorry. You were saying?
And then going on, looking on the clearance rack. During
clearance. That's
time.
It.
I'm a clearance queen.
I'm the clearance queen. Clearance and coupon. They call me
exactly.
CC.
Exactly. And, I mean, four times a year, you're going to have incredible sales at major department stores with, I mean, quality items that will last for the amount of time that they need, because kids, I mean, like every 3 months, you know, there's a growth spurt, and so you have to buy something new anyway.
Oh, yeah.
So you might as well not spend a whole lot of money, but have quality clothing so they can at least feel like they're in style, or feel like, you know, they didn't get the cheapest thing on the rack and feel ostracized because their friends are making fun of them.
Right.
So, but like I said, communication is the biggest thing. I take my daughter shopping sometimes. Sometimes I don't, because I'm kind of learning what her style is. But for the most part, I try to let her go there to the store with me. And we talk about ranges. We look at the prices. And that's one thing, kids, just don't look at the price. And I'm always asking, well, did you look at the price?
They don't look at the price tag.
Exactly. Not because I'm trying to be cheap, but because I just want them to be conscious of the fact that things cost money, and you need to understand that everything has a price, and you can always find a better price somewhere else or on a different rack or whatever it is.
Right.
And just teaching them how to be responsible adults and how to use their money wisely. And it's a great lesson for them, you know, in picking out clothes or picking out shoes or even just basic necessities, toiletries, all those things. Will help them become responsible and help them use their money wisely, especially when they finally go away to college or get their own apartment. They're going to really be thankful for the lessons they received when they were younger when it comes to picking out different things.
Yeah, so now, ladies, both of you have touched on a topic that I always talk to young people about, and that is instant gratification.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
Now, we've seen it, and, you know, the kids, they want that biggest, brightest, shiniest, baddest thing now. They want it now. They don't want to sift through the clearance racks. They don't want to go and get a coupon. They don't want to wait and save. They want it now.
Right.
So, you know, and that anger comes in because society is so instant now. We're so much faster now that, you know.
Marketing to the very aggressive.
Yeah, to slow your child down a little bit and say, hey, wait a minute. Look at the price on this shoe and look at the price on that one and see which one is really what you need, not just what's fixing your head from some ad that you saw on TV somewhere. And really, you know, to slow the child down, I think, is important.
Well, Denise, for me, I have always taught my son two things. First of all, no one is better than you. They just have more stuff.
Okay.
The second thing is that you are more than what you wear.
Mm-hmm.
And so when we start instilling that very early on, one of the biggest mistakes I think parents do, and I want to say this may be something unique to minority parents, you see minority parents from impoverished community putting a 3, 6, or 8-month-year-old in a designer leather jacket, in shoes, that they're not even walking yet, and you see them with all these labels and names all over a child. I mean,
absolutely, and
that is insane. That is absolutely insane. So of course they're going to grow up being very label conscious. So if you're 12 months in whatever the latest designer is, what do you think you're going to be wanting 12 years?
Well, because when my son was little, as an infant, there were parents out there that had their kids decked out in Sean John, Rockefeller, you name it. And now those same little kids grew up, and they're at age 12, and they're in the store fighting with their mom over a Coach bag that they want. A Coach bag, okay?
A Coach bag
at 12, okay? And meanwhile, there's no thought, there's no action towards that child's future. I mean future as in education. I mean putting away money for college. I mean putting away money for trade school. That's not occurring at all.
It's not even money for college. Let's talk about money for enrichment activities that should be happening in the junior and middle school.
Exactly. Mm-hmm.
Piano lessons, other SAT prep courses. I mean, there are so many more things to spend resources on than a bag with someone else's name on it.
Oh, yes. Now, ladies, here's the other thing, too, because I don't want it to be a one-sided conversation. I'm always talking to moms about their own anger and their own attitude on this instant gratification. We've seen so many mothers do it. I got to get mine first.
Oh,
I got to get mine first. And then he can go, I got to get my tips, my hair, my bling. I got to get my dairy on. I got to get my baby fat. I got to get this. And then I will get for the child. So, of course, there's some anger there with that, too, isn't it?
Oh, yeah.
Absolutely. I can't even imagine having something first ahead of my child. I can't imagine. But I do see it, and you're totally right. How a mother justifies that and what how that child must feel to see his mom go out and get, you know, and spend $80, $100 on her hair, and that child needs shoes or a winter coat, that they're boiling over inside.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Major issues will arise from that. And to me, that's just so foreign because it's like my friends are always fussing at me because I don't go and buy myself new clothes or shoes or whatever, and I wear stuff, and I put my quality things, I'm wearing things for years, and I'm like, can't even buy stuff. Because
yeah.
I take care of my child, you know. They
exactly.
are my first responsibility, you know. And the only thing that I would say I put first in terms of my life compared to theirs is my mental and emotional health, because if I'm not mentally healthy or emotionally healthy, then I can't give to them in a way that they can be happy, healthy, and well-adjusted. That's the only thing that I'll put ahead of them.
Mm-hmm.
Because
and since we're talking about putting things ahead of our children, you know where I'm going with this, Denise. We cannot put a relationship and a man we barely know ahead of our child.
Ooh,
exactly.
That's
one
a goodie.
Children
Ooh.
Are very angry about is that no, and what I feel adamantly about this, no child should meet a man in their bathroom in the middle of the night.
Oh, my God, no.
No child should bump into any strange man in their own home.
And no child should be disciplined by someone they've only known for 48 hours.
Absolutely not. What a betrayal. What an absolute betrayal of the parent-son, parent-daughter bond for that to happen.
Now, for you to say that now, the parent, the bond in the home, now there's where the anger comes in. All of a sudden, it's been you and I living together, and then this other person comes in.
And
we got to make way for this person now. Who is this person?
Came in abruptly without a proper introduction, without a proper prep. So let's talk about that. How do you bring someone into this relationship that has been just a mother and a son for many, many years? You address that in your book, and I think I take a lot of best practices from that, but it was something that was always a part of me. I think it's okay to tell our young children, Mommy is seeing someone. I'm going out to dinner tonight. And if the child says, well, when am I going to get to meet them? When I think it is more appropriate. Right now they're just a friend.
That's right.
Mm-hmm.
And then as it progresses, it's something else. But I think the very worst thing you can do for a situation is a child goes to sleep at night and they wake up in the morning and there's somebody else new on the set.
We have to take into consideration the child's feelings. And the second component of that, Van, is the mother ascribing to the child an adult role in the home. Oh, you're man of the house. You know, you're man of the house, you know, so I want you to do this. And then all of a sudden you're going to bring a man in the house where you got a so-called man already there.
No.
Well, now the child is really pissed off because now you're taking my role. What is this? Who is
he's confused,
this?
He's angry, he's distrustful, and it becomes the point, too, where a lot of boys love their mothers, but they don't respect them.
Oh, right. Boy. Well, that's where the anger comes in. And what we have talked about, ladies, on numerous conversations is trust. And respect. Trust and respect. I'm talking about the kind of respect, ladies, where my son can go to any barbershop in this county, and no man knows the color of my drawers, respect. That's what I'm talking about.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Because what we do in the dark, our children have to face in the light, and that's embarrassing. When you see those Maury Povich shows and the girl's got six men up there calling her a whore and they open up the envelope and not one of those six men she had unprotected sex with is the child's father, who's the baby? Oh, it's just out of control with
it
the respect level.
The child looks at his mother, and we see it in the music. That's why the music has taken a certain tone, because that's how they view women, because that's they've gotten their definition of womanhood from an ill-appropriate source.
I don't understand how women cannot demand that respect and uphold it by her actions. You can tell, you can say to me all in the world, respect me, but if you're out there acting like this and that, then that respect has not been earned or demonstrated.
And to give someone, give multiple people unlimited access to your children is another form of child abuse.
Right.
It's just something that I say to women all the time, trust and respect. Your son is growing up. His hormones are changing. He's viewing every single thing that you do. That's the second biggest mistake. Parents don't think, oh, he's not paying attention. He's a kid.
Is
a sponge. Their middle name is sponge. They pick up every single thing because the brain is growing. It's soaking up everything. And if parents definitely make the wrong assumption in thinking, oh, he's not paying attention, he can't possibly hear us getting it on in the next room because he's sleeping. All shut eye and no sleep where I come from, you know, and all good night ain't going home. So,
yep.
You know, parents need to understand that what you do, your child is going to pick it up. I don't care how much you don't think so, it is so. And that respect and trust has to be demonstrated. You have to show it so your child knows what it is, and therefore they can maintain that.
Yep. Because there's nothing that will make a child more angry and disrespectful, and you'll start seeing them acting out at home and acting out at school. And once they start that, we all know it's a downward spiral.
I don't know how women out here can think that their children should demonstrate and give respect and trust when they're out here with, you know, the low-rider jeans on and the stretch marks and tattoos out, the weave, everything is all over the place, like they're still their child's age. I happily tell people I am not in my son's generation. We're from a different generation. I'm somebody's mother, so I'm going to dress and act accordingly.
And children have enough friends. That's one thing that I say. If you're your child's best friend, then both of you have a problem. You need some grown-up company, and he needs a grown-up in his life.
Oh, no. No, the trust and respect thing has to be earned. And we've talked about this in our last conversation about money, right, Samantha, when we were saying, you know, you have to expose your child to money if you want him to learn how to handle it and understand it. The same thing goes with the trust and action and values that you as an individual hold. You want your son to have trust and respect of you. Don't go out there and do these things like you're his age.
Mm-hmm.
You're not his age. I simply don't understand why that's done with women. And when I question him about it, it's like, well, you know, I got to get mine. I got to get my groove on. You know, it's Friday night. I got to go out and have a good time. Parenting takes sacrifice. That's something that is not always said. Parenting is also very difficult. It's hard as hell.
Yeah.
Sacrifice and the challenges you face with it. This is no walk in the park. This is not just holding a cute little doll in your arms with the latest outfit on. This is work.
I tell people if it's easy, then you're not doing it right.
It's hard out here. It's hard and it's rough and it's tough. And this whole respect and trust principle does breed anger and contempt when it's not done correctly, when it's not dealt with in a certain approach of, I understand you as an individual, I'm going to take time to listen to you, and I want to be listened to as well. Simple as that. Simple
Absolutely.
As that. So I really have a problem with that whole instant gratification thing and about, I'm going to get mine. And then the child will get his. I don't understand that.
I think it has a lot to do with maturity or lack of maturity in the individual and the refusal to take full responsibility of the fact that they're a parent, that this is real life. It's about being a full-grown adult and not trying to relive or go backwards to some unfulfilled dream or fantasy. You know, this
mm-hmm.
is about moving
there it
forward,
is.
Moving forward in your life
there
and, you know, taking full, I mean, being noticing and realizing that, you know, this is a decision you made to have a child, whether you decided to, you know, while you were single or if you got married and you ended up being divorced or whatever the reason, you still, this is a decision you made and you have to live with that decision. And it's not about trying to go back and because let's say a teenager had a child, but they're going to miss so many different things. And then as a child gets older and they're starting to feel resentment or regret because they didn't go out to parties and they didn't get to go this place or that place or didn't have boyfriends or whatever because they were staying up at 3 o'clock in the morning with a child, you know, all these things come into play and they haven't learned the lessons of life that when you make a decision, you have to live with it. There are consequences and just do what you have to do, you know.
Yep.
And so the anger continues to fester underneath the surface for, on both sides, whether it's the parent or the child. And it's
oh, yeah, and I said in my book, from the time that woman decides to keep that pregnancy, from the very moment she decides, I'm keeping this one, I'm keeping this baby, it's no longer about her.
Absolutely.
Exactly.
It's
exactly.
No longer about her. It's about having the best, successful, viable, healthy, strong baby she can possibly get. And a lot of women just say, oh, yeah, I'm going to have this baby, but I'm still going to go ahead and do blah, 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 blah. That lifestyle, that lifetime is over.
Over.
It's over. It is over. Now my son is a sophomore in college. Now, yeah, I can break night. I can stay out. I don't have to call him. I don't have to rush home and make dinner. He's gone.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so that's where my life can pick up again, but it took 19 years to get there.
19 years. Yep.
You know, I want to pull back for a minute. Van, I need you to describe and tell the listeners about your magazine, please, and how they can get it.
Oh, sure. Junior Magazine is an academic product. It's for parents and educators of boys. We devote 75% of our editorial to the unique learning styles of boys and the special developmental needs of boys. We specifically talk about boys in school, how to navigate the educational system. We talk about the learning styles of boys, how parents and educators need to be more in tune with how boys learn. Boys are visual learners. They need more visual clues in the classroom to help them succeed. And they need maybe a little bit more guidance and support than maybe some of the girls. Girls are naturally sit still for longer periods of time so they can take in the information on the board a little bit better than boys. Boys have a high energy level, and that puts them at odds with the sit-down paperwork that's involved with learning in schools. So that's what we address at Junior Magazine. Again, it's a magazine for and about bringing up successful boys, raising them and educating them. We certainly want to encourage people to subscribe and to introduce the magazine to their schools, churches, and community groups. You can log on to juniorthemagazine.com or certainly give us a call at 201-892-6752. But definitely the magazine is a true resource for parents and educators of boys.
And how much is it to have a subscription?
$5 for a subscription. A subscription is 5 issues.
Okay, so it's $25.
Mm-hmm.
Uh-huh. Okay, thank you. And now, Samantha, could you tell us about your Rich Single Mama?
Rich Single Mama is a blog/website that is devoted to personal finance for single moms. It's widely known that single mom, that's one of the biggest issues, money, for single mothers, and I seek to address how they can earn money, save money, manage the money they have, and also looking at different resources and ways to make extra money if needed on the side. It's a side hustle series. And also I'm giving people a sneak peek at the new community I've put together. It's the Rich Single Mama community. It's economic empowerment for single moms, and it's a place where they can go and look at or have financial calculators,
There are articles. There's also a few games with real-life scenarios that they can play. It's a fun place to be. You can have your own blog or web page and put pictures up. And also, it's quite interactive. So, and that is found at community.richsinglemama.com. And my blog is richsinglemama.com.
Excellent, excellent. Ladies, I think we have a caller here in the queue. Let me see if this person's on the line. Hello, caller, are you there? Hello? Okay, so we're going to keep going. We have a lot to talk about. We have a lot to do. Let's talk about the second segment now about education. Education influences money, does it not, Samantha? Because you need a skill, you need knowledge, you need the intellect on how to navigate in order to earn. Is that correct?
Definitely, definitely. Because I think a lot of times we are so, I know ignorant is a strong word, but that's really the best phrasing that I can put to it. And the reason why so many people are living in poverty or are underemployed and are just struggling as a single mom trying to support a family. And a lot of times child support is very little or just not even available. So having an education, and it doesn't necessarily have to be a college degree, but it could be a certificate, it could be anything that will advance you in your career or the workplace or in trying to start your own business.
Right, so even a trade education in a vocational school, you know, refrigeration and air conditioning, some of these programs are just 9 months long, but it gives you a skill that makes you more marketable, correct?
Correct, correct. I know that one company I worked with, there were software engineers and hardware engineers, and they went, and computer programmers, all they had is a certificate, and they were making over $75,000 a year.
Okay.
And it was for a 9-month certification.
Right.
And these things, they can do it while they're working. There's so many online resources, online classes, and so the availability is there. And I happen to live in a state that has a lottery-funded education. So any adult can go back to school and get an education, a certification, or whatever. I think it's to have to get a certification. And the state will pay for it. No money out of pocket. They'll pay for books. They'll pay for tuition. All you have to do is show up to class. And,
wow.
And you can earn a certification in, like you said, less than 6 months to a year and get an entirely new career.
Yes,
so.
And, you know, it can be obtained, parents, single moms. I don't want there to be the excuse of, oh, you know, well, I got child care, I can't get there. These programs, some programs offer stipends to help with child care.
Exactly.
You can also, which we talked about the last segment, you can barter with child care. If someone helps you watch a child while you go to school, you can then turn around and watch their child on the weekend while you're home studying and let the kids have a play date that way. There are ways to get around this to empower yourself. One of the most empowering things in my life besides being a mom was getting my master's degree, and now I'm a PhD candidate. It took dedication. It took work. I was not out Saturday night shaking my booty. I was not out here doing these things, but I was able to navigate through that, and it took dedication, focus, hard work. I had to sacrifice, but it can be done. And it's a wonderful incentive for your own child to see you going to school, see you in the learning process, and then it makes them want to participate too.
Exactly. And because I got my master's degree through an online program, so I was working full-time and in my degree program, studying every night, writing papers. It was grueling. It was frustrating at times, but I knew what I needed to do in order to reach the goal that I set for myself.
And that made you more marketable, did it not?
Yes. It definitely made me more marketable. And I don't regret one minute of it. But I think fear drives a lot of the reason why people don't want to move forward. And fear of the unknown, low self-esteem, so many things that prevent them from making that decision. And it all starts with decisions. It's not about your emotions. It's not about, you know, your circumstances. It's a decision to do something different with your life, mm-hmm. and to make that first step toward achieving that goal that you're setting for yourself.
Yes, and let me tell you, going back to school takes away the anger. You're just too tired and you're so blessedly distracted. You don't have time to be angry at the world.
Exactly.
Because your mind is expanding and your heart is expounding and you're learning and growing. You don't have time to be angry with the world because you're hitting those books. And
exactly.
your son is there with you and your children are there. And it is such a wonderful feeling when graduation time comes and you've made this huge achievement. So it really does help with the anger component as far as working on thyself, as we talked
okay.
about earlier part of the show, addressing your own needs. And
yes.
going back to school is a wonderful empowerment tool to do that.
I agree 100%.
It's a wonderful empowerment tool. Now, the other side of that anger component, now, Van, I'm going to pull you in on this one, is the school system itself for our children. Our children go out into the world. We gave them this wonderful, nurturing home environment. They come back, and they're pissed off. What happened?
Well, they're going on, absolutely. Two things are going on in school, first of all. Many of our young boys come to school very early on. They're very excited about learning. But because of so many of their educators, and especially in early childhood development, are women, they take many of their male issues out on our boys. And that is very, very claustrophobic for a lot of our boys who come to school, and all they're told from the first day of preschool is to sit down and be quiet, and you're my bad child, and you're always causing problems in this classroom, and why don't you feel like little Janie over here? So he comes to school excited at first, and then he learns very early on that school doesn't like him, teachers don't like him, and he's not a good fit.
Mm-hmm.
And he goes home, and your mom, he talks to his mom, and she says, "What did you learn today?" And he said, "I learned just how to sit down and shut up."
Yeah.
That's
what he learned.
Connect very early on in the learning of boys. And so we have to make sure that we're speaking to schools and speaking to educators and know that they're in tune with the unique learning styles of boys.
Mm-hmm.
And that their goal isn't to always punish boys, isn't always to say there's something wrong with them and they need a pill, but that they are natural boys, they have natural boy energy, and it goes against everything we know about the inside workings of a boy to expect him to sit still for 8 hours a day and just do pen and paper work.
Now, Van, let's talk about the education model, because you know what we hear so many times with our black boys going to school. Either he's going to be an educator or he's going to be a scholar. An athlete.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So now I think it's important that boys are taught they can do both.
Mm-hmm. You can be a whole boy, and I think a lot of the, especially in private schools, they're very much in tune with educating the whole boy. That's the theme in a lot of the better school systems. And so even in the public school system, we have to infuse that education with that education model. Educate the whole boy. We have to nurture the whole boy at home and make sure the teachers are in tune with that at school. And if that means getting some enrichment activities like piano lessons on the weekend or piano lessons at church, ballet, and maybe some sports that takes place in school, all of that is important. All of that is important. But to hold the schools accountable and make sure that you are a visible force in the school and not just showing up on the first day and the last day. In school, and that you know that I am concerned about the education of my whole boy. Yes, my son plays football, he plays basketball, he also plays the piano, and he's a straight-A student. And
right.
all of them feed naturally into the other. If you'd like to continue to play sports, then I don't want to see grades slipping. If grades slip, then obviously we have a concentration issue, and we will have to take away some of these other activities.
Right. It seems like the boys are being told they could be either one or the other. Either you're going to be a scholar or you're going to be an athlete. They're saying, it's very hard to do both. It's very hard to do both. And especially
and
for our brown boys. especially for the brown boys.
Be balanced in the home, and it has to be balanced in the school. One of the biggest things with the whole debate between sports and athletics is that my son told me very clearly, and I thought about it, and it made perfect sense. He says, Mom, when you're good in sports, they give you a big trophy. When you're good in school, they give you a small blue ribbon.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Yeah.
There it is, that incentive that we have to pull into for our boys. They have to know the WIFM, as we call it in social work. What's in it for me?
Mm-hmm.
Now, in sports, I get the girls, I get the trophy, I get the letter jacket, I get the popularity in school. But if I'm a 4.0 student, what do I get? Geek,
and
nerd,
let's go back,
bookworm.
Let's go back to that in the home. Some boys use sports to get the attention of absentee fathers.
True.
Some fathers will never show up at a PTA meeting. They will never show up at a school academic function, but they'll brag about, I never miss a game.
Mm-hmm. Ah, brilliant.
Exactly.
That's brilliant. And true, too. Brilliant.
Yeah, that feeds the way the child is thinking about school. They're thinking, they're using their prowessness on the field to try to get some unmet need met. They said, he won't show up for this, but he'll show up for this. So let me try to exceed as much as I can in this. So they begin to refocus.
And that anger then with the education system is, in the classroom, he's not getting that male attention.
Ignored.
But on the field or the court, he's going to get it.
I'm going to get cheers. I'm going to get ignored in the classroom, but on the field I'm going to get cheers.
Okay. So it's important then for that black single mom to give him the same accolade and attention in the classroom,
absolutely,
in the books, that he would get on the field.
Mm-hmm. And for me as a parent, like I said, my son plays sports, and he's very accomplished at both. I rarely go to games. I always go to PTA meetings and school things, because that sends a message, too. He has enough people cheering him on the field.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. He only has me cheering for him in the classroom.
Okay.
So
that's very important.
About that. When you are very clear about that, and I'm very clear about that with him, it's not that I don't want you to play sports. It's that when you're on your team, you have enough people cheering for you there.
Right.
I come and
right.
cheer for you when there's nobody.
All right. And that's so true. That is very true. Because in my house, he always talked about the adage of not if you're going to go to college or trade school, but
absolutely
when.
Not. When.
It's
yeah.
going to be when. And it's going to be, let's go do these college tours. Let's sit down and look at these pamphlets and brochures. Let's talk to some people. It takes that kind of involvement. And the humility, I think anger, basically, ladies, gets dispelled when you humble yourself a little bit, don't you think?
And when you're that involved in your child's life, again, they don't have time to be angry, because they see, even when they don't have, they see other things happening. Even if they have to go to school in tennis shoes, they're a little bit older than the other kids, they still see some activity, some love. Love is a verb. It
mm-hmm.
is active. And so when they see that in other aspects of their lives, even if there's not enough money for everything, every toy, every gadget, they still feel surrounded and embraced by a woman that loves them, and they can
yes.
do anything with that kind of embracement.
Yes, and we talked about in our first session here a couple of weeks ago about that trust factor, you know, where Mike Tyson says in his documentary, if only I ever encountered or had a woman I could trust,
yep.
my life would be totally different.
Different.
Completely different. It is so important. I am just a repetitive recording monster to women who are mothers about how important it is that their children trust them.
If he can't trust his own mother, he'll never be able to trust another woman.
Exactly.
He won't be able to trust anything. He will always be doubting himself, his money, his education, his relationships, his house. Everything that he has will always be under scrutiny mm-hmm. because he just doesn't have that inner trust that we as mothers can give. And I think that is so very important. And that anger blocks the trust. When you're pissed off and angry, you can't do anything else. You will not be an effective mother. You will not be an effective black woman. You will not be an effective parent when you're that angry. So I think it's very important that mothers understand that anger blocks the potential that they have to be the best mother in the world. That's my belief.
Absolutely. Denise, I have to sign off very quickly, so I don't know if you want me to address anything as I close. I do have to step out into another dinner engagement. So,
oh, sure, sure. So now, Van, tell us, you know, what are you working on here now for the next issue of your magazine?
Next issue is all about sports in the lives of boys. We're talking about the boy brain and why recess is very important and why movement and boys go hand in hand. We're going to be profiling some exciting boys who are doing some wonderful things. One of the profiles in the next issue, Sports in the Lives of Boys, is a profile on Marlon Roll, who was a star football player at Florida State University and who's now a Rhodes Scholar and studying medicine. He passed on their career in the NFL for now to study medicine, and we are just so proud of this young man who made this decision that he can always go back and do this. He couldn't go and be a Rhodes Scholar.
Oh, that's fabulous.
Great story, and a wonderful motivation for our boys. But we want to begin to educate parents why movement and boys go hand in hand. Boys need a break from books every now and then, and sports teaches boys real leadership skills and can be a powerful tool to helping them stay engaged in the academic process.
All right, excellent. Now, for the show on December 13th at 8 o'clock, you'll be joining us, correct? Because we're going to have Jason Gilmore, the documentary.
IEP,
yes.
And I want to talk about why are all the black boys on IEPs.
Okay, so we will see you on December 13th, 2009 at 8 o'clock.
Yes, see you soon.
Okay, thanks again, Van.
Signing off. Bye-bye.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
So now, Samantha, it's about the anger in the home. It's about the anger and trust with school. It's about the anger of not being fulfilled. Now, from the money side, it's not going to happen right away unless you hit the lottery. But
right.
That fulfillment on a financial level, that's a gradual process, isn't it?
It is. It is a gradual process. Instant gratification and money really don't go hand in hand. I mean, it's just the reality. How many people who won the lottery are now poor again?
Right.
You know.
Right.
They've gotten all this money. They didn't know how to handle it or manage it, use it so that they'll have a future with the money still there. So they're right back where they were.
Mm-hmm.
So it is a process. It does take time. It takes education. It takes making a conscious decision that my money matters more than just the latest my bank account, how it looks now, or getting a lot of people looking for refund checks coming in the next few months, or a refund check not just from the government, but if they decide to go back to school, they're going to look for a refund check and for a loan or student refund. So, but when they get it, it's gone. So you're right back at the same place that you were.
Okay.
So without some education, without some clear and decisive decision-making, you're just back in the same bag, and you've not learned a lesson, and you are still angry and frustrated because the child support check didn't get there in time, or the paycheck is late, or for whatever reason, or you may be facing layoff.
Mm-hmm.
So those things are serious stressors that just add to the anger issue. And the mother, it filters into the children's lives, and into the world. So it's
mm-hmm.
a really serious, serious deal.
Now, a woman is had a long day. Single mom has had a long day, and she's coming home, and the kids got homework, and they got slips to sign from school. She's got to prepare some sort of a nutritious meal that's going to fill those bellies. She's got to get them coordinated and almost get ready to get back on that vicious cycle again tomorrow. But meanwhile, she's angry. Things are not working out. Things are not balancing out. There's just not enough. What would you recommend that she do right off the bat to try to get her on track? What would you recommend that she sit down and start to process or start to actually address?
Well, the first thing I would tell her to do is breathe. I mean, if you really look at it, when you're going through all of this stress, you're not breathing properly.
True.
You're holding your breath, and I found myself doing that a lot of times.
Oh,
we
women hold our breath a lot.
Yes, we hold our breath, and that just adds more stress to your body and your mind. And you're not getting oxygen to your brain. You can't think clearly. So that would be the first thing. Just sit down and breathe. And then after you breathe, get some notepad, a pen, and just write down everything that you want and need. And also even write a little bit about why you're feeling angry, because if we don't really recognize why we're feeling angry, especially when it relates to our finances, we really can't start to find solutions.
Okay.
And the cycle continues over and over and over again. Things get a little bit better because you may work overtime, but then you're back at the same place. So sitting down, writing what you want and need, writing out what is causing the stress and anger, and really looking at that. And then I would say put it down, because at that time you really can't process it. You give yourself time to think about what's happening. And yes, you may say, well, life continues on, and I can't just, things can't go like this forever and ever and ever. No, it can't, but it's not going to change overnight.
Right.
So you have to give yourself time to process it in your subconscious, to come up with some ideas, some solutions. And then after you've thought about it for a while, or maybe a few days, a couple of days or a week at the most, look for resources. Find out what's in your community. Find out what you can do right here and now. And the first thing when it comes to being stressed about money, I tell single moms, sell something. It's really simple to do, because especially in this economy, people are looking for inexpensive, gently used items that they can buy that they need right now, versus going to the store and paying a big ticket price on an item where they can get it used. So you may be just the thing, or have just a piece of furniture, electronic, or whatever that they need at the time, and you can get some quick cash in your hand. So that way you feel like you're at least solving a problem when you do that. And then you try to start putting a plan in place. Look at your expenses. Look at where you can cut costs. And like we're both coupon queens and clearance sale queens. Use those coupons. Use those clearances to cut your expenses, because a lot of times we're just so caught up in this everyday life, we're not conscious of how much we're spending. We don't know where the money's going. And even if you are, if you do think that you are pulling in the reins, there are still areas where you can make changes to kind of plug up some of those holes and see more money in your account at the end of the month versus a negative balance.
Mm-hmm.
So those are a few things that I recommend that single moms do to just start off. And then over time, with some assistance, with resources and books or websites, you know, begin to educate yourself on how to, first of all, cut expenses and understand that your income and your expenses should be very different. You should be spending much less than you're earning and bringing in, so that you'll have that cushion in case of emergency, or when you want to save for a vacation, or the kids need some shoes. But and the other day I was thinking, you know what? Every penny that comes into your home should have a job. Every penny, whether it goes to paying a bill, whether it goes to savings, whether it goes to child care, whatever, so that every penny, when it has a place, you won't be so caught up in extra spending or making purchases that you really have no, I won't say business making, but if you have it all planned out, then you won't have so many surprises, and you'll be able to manage what you have more effectively, and you'll feel more in control of the money that you do have.
Mm-hmm. Well, I have to admit, when I go out and shop, I ask myself, well, first of all, I have a list. I go out with a list, so that way I'm just not arbitrarily or pulling down whatever. I asked myself, do you really need that right now?
Exactly.
And the second thing that I did to make things work here for me is I took a huge inventory of what I already have.
Mm-hmm.
I opened up those storage bins. I went through my pantry, and I found out a couple of things about me. I didn't need to buy soap now for the next 6 months.
Okay. Yeah.
I don't need to buy another pen for another year or two. You know, what I'm saying is, if you take stock and inventory, that's money that you're purchasing on stuff you already have could be put on something else.
Exactly.
So I think it's important for the mom to pull back for a minute, like you said, take some time to breathe, pull herself together, and assess what she has, assess what she wants, and assess how she's going to get there.
Right, exactly.
Now, this five-year plan, you know, I hear this line thrown out forever. Oh, I wrote a five-year plan, and what is a good five-year plan for a single mom?
It varies greatly depending on, like you said, the evaluation of their goals, their wants, their needs.
Mm-hmm.
I did one for myself.
Mm-hmm.
I am not going to tell you how old I am, but
yeah.
But I did the 5-year plan based on where my children are.
Okay.
My daughter is in middle school. She'll be going
okay.
to high school next year. So I say, okay, in 5 years, she's going to be ready to go to college. So I need to be planning now where I want her to be. I know I can't dictate everything about her life, but realistically, she could be going to college in 5 years. My son will be just going into high school.
Mm-hmm.
So I kind of look at it from that perspective versus my own life, even though I have added those, you know, things in. But needing to save a certain amount of money, so the entrance fees, the application fees, all the things that is going to be needed for my child to get into college or trade school, whichever one she decides, I'll need to have in place. And then if she were in high school now and she's going to be finished college and maybe in a relationship and want to get married, then maybe she'll be looking at buying a home. I want to be able to help her with that. So I need to have some money set aside to be able to help her with that. So on a 5-year plan, having a certain amount in savings, having an emergency fund, having a college fund or at least some money put aside for a college fund is very essential. And then even in other areas of life, doing research based on what you think your future will be. If I want to take a round-the-world cruise in 5 years, I need to at least be looking at brochures, looking at the travel agency. I want to handle all the arrangements. There are a lot of different things that can go into a 5-year plan, but you have to at least be focused. If you want to be in a house by that time, now's the time to be getting your credit report together, looking at it and seeing what needs to be corrected or taken care of. Also, any debt, paying those debts off, getting your credit score will be in a place where you get a very good loan. If you want to have a car by that time, looking at the credit report again and saving, because the more you can put down, the less your monthly payment will be and the quicker you can pay it off and own that vehicle. So there are so many different things to look at when you're creating a 5-year plan, and a lot of times we're afraid to even look at the future and say, well, you know, you never know what's going to happen. Of course you don't. Not in minute detail, but you do have some control over what can happen once you start putting a plan in place now. At least
yeah.
you have a direction. You have a map that you're setting in place so that you'll say, okay, in 3 to 5 years I'll be here. And once you make that decision, then miraculously almost your life starts turning in that direction. But with no direction, you'll be in the same place 5 years from now.
Now, that's an excellent point that you're bringing up, Samantha, because I know listeners who will listen to this broadcast will say they want these single moms to sit down and write a 5-year plan. Some of these single moms can't think of next week, much less 5 years from now. True. That's true. Some people just can't visualize themselves in the future. Mm-hmm. However, I think if the belief starts with an idea,
it does.
And with the thought that you want the best situation and the best life for your child, that has to be of comfort, and that has to be a starting place for single moms.
It does.
It has to be a starting place where they can sit down and say, you know what, I'm tired of this stuff. I don't like living like this, and I want to sit down and try to write out how I can take some steps to change this. I'm tired of living paycheck to paycheck. I'm
mm-hmm.
tired of struggling. I'm tired of the stress of trying to make ends meet.
Exactly.
And I think the 5-year plan has to be realistic, has to be realistic. And I think, as you said just now, it is a good tool to help keep you focused. It may not all work out exactly the way you wrote it down,
mm-hmm.
but at least there's something there that's yours. This is yours.
Mm-hmm. And the good
ownership.
thing about it is plans can be modified.
Oh, sure.
You come into knowledge or focus, especially as you are looking at your plan on a hopefully regular basis, then you kind of can tweak it. You can say, okay, well, maybe I don't want this after all, but let me put this down instead. But you're still working toward a goal, and you're not just out there, you know, flailing around hoping something good will happen to you. You have to create your circumstances and create the kind of future that you want versus allowing life and circumstances to happen to you. That's
right.
The best way to be frustrated forever because
mm-hmm.
you're not in control. You're not empowered when you would just allow life to just happen to you. So, and I'm a big believer in that. You have to create the circumstances that you want. Otherwise, you're going to get what you have always gotten. I know that's bad English, but you're going to get the same thing you've gotten from 5 years ago.
Yeah.
And still be in the same place, still angry, frustrated, and even jealous of those people who took the initiative to make a plan for their life, and then they're so much further ahead than you are because you did make a plan. And whose
mm-hmm.
fault is it? It's your own.
Mm-hmm.
Because you have the power to at least plan your life. And you have the power to sit down, to write things down, and to do whatever it is you want to do. You can dream big. And at least, what they say, reach for the stars, at least hit the atmosphere or something. It'll be higher than where you are now.
Yes.
But the
thing that really is important for moms who are overwhelmed, who are angry, or who are just stressed out, is to sit down and really assess the time management. Earlier in this show tonight, I broached on the subject of the mom being out of church, you know, for all three services, and she's the chairperson of this committee, and the kids are right out there with her. I'm not knocking that. I'm not saying that that's a bad thing. I'm saying is single moms are two people in one,
mm-hmm.
and the time management is crucial because if she overextends herself by volunteering and doing community work or working overtime or helping out with a family member, all of these things have to be time managed because once you overextend yourself, it's very hard to pull back. It's very hard. You'll never catch up on that lost sleep. You'll never get it back.
No, never.
Never. So it's very, very important that time management comes into play. And I think for single moms, sure, it's great to attend church services with your children. Spirituality is and always will be a part of our lives. We cannot ignore God. However, staying for two services, three services, being a chairperson of a committee in the church, and meanwhile your home is not taken care of, there's no supervision for your kids, they're tired, they have needs too, and then when you get home you have this mountain of things to do with only 2 hours to do it in.
Right, which adds to the frustration.
It adds to the frustration. So time management for moms is important. And I'm not saying moms can't go out and recreate and have a good time. You are supposed to, but it's not supposed to happen every Friday night.
Right.
Maybe one Friday night a month. That's your time to get out and let loose and do your thing.
And I think that's all a part of making a plan for your life. You know,
right.
Sitting down and scheduling your life.
Right.
I block my time out. I don't schedule hour by hour, minute by minute, but I get blocks of time where I will schedule things to do so that I know that, okay, between this 1 o'clock and 3 o'clock, I know I'm going to do this, you know.
Right.
And even during the weekly activities, okay, I know that once a month or once every 3 months I'll be doing X, Y, and Z. So that there is some flexibility there, but there is some structure as well. And I know with single moms that there needs to be both because you never know what will happen, what will come up, and you need to have the room to be able to make a quick decision.
Right.
But if you are just, if it's all about you, it's all about your, you know, self-gratification and going out doing your own thing, then the priorities are a little messed up and need to be reevaluated, or else your house is going to literally fall apart.
Mm-hmm.
So
that's true. That is definitely true, that it is really very important that single moms understand the priorities.
Mm-hmm.
And instant gratification is not one of them. It's just not.
No.
It's going to just set you up for failure. It's going to get, it's going to take away your control is
mm-hmm.
what it does.
It does.
And
now,
I think
plan gratification is good.
Right.
Because you can plan out what you want to do in the next few days or few weeks, but not, you know, on a regular basis to where everything else in your life is falling apart and your kids are being neglected and feeling unloved, you know, so it all plays into it. And it's just something that the responsibility for parenting your child is a heavy weight for a single mother, but at the same time, it can be a joy once you prioritize things, schedule your life, and decide what's most important. And if you don't do it at this point in time in the game, especially if your children are young, by the time they're older and you're older, you're going to have so many regrets because you didn't do things differently.
Absolutely. Absolutely. That is so true. I planned out that I was going to go back to college. I went through 3 colleges in 7 years to get to the point from my associates to my bachelor's to my master's, and I did that all being a single parent while working. It can be done, but it does take that sacrifice. That instant gratification was not there. I had to navigate and ask for help.
Yes.
Stressed out moms are moms who can't ask for help and recognize when they need the help. It is so important for single moms to turn around and say, hey, you know what? I'm having a hard time with this. Could you help me out with this? Or can we trade off on child care? You know, I'll babysit for you a couple hours, you babysit for me. Or could you pick this up for me if you're going to that store? Here's the money. You know,
right.
Could you, you know, do that. Extend yourself and say, I need help with this.
Yep,
it's very, very important to do that.
Very, very important. Otherwise, you'll be a basket case, literally.
And it brings up the anger because you feel the weight's on your shoulders, and you're the
right
one who's pulling the load all the time. And it's single motherhood is one of the most gratifying and enjoying moments of my life. I've had some wonderful times in raising my son, and we've had some wonderful experiences, and we've encountered some wonderful, God-given and blessed people in our lives. No
mm-hmm.
doubt about that. But I had to, like we said earlier in the conversation, forgive myself. I had to let go of that anger. I had to humble myself
mm-hmm.
and say to people, I need help. I need to learn how to do this. Could you show me? I needed to slow my son down when he wanted something.
Mm-hmm.
I needed to slow myself down. I needed to take out that instant gratification and understand about sacrifice. These are all the things we've talked about for the past hour that really helps reduce the anger component in the household of a single mom. Also understanding the school system, as Van talked about how boys learn, and what's necessary for a successful single mom is an attentive, participating mom in that school and understanding what her son needs. And we've talked about that. So I think these things are very, very important. And to sit down and write out some type of a plan, some hopes on an index card, some dreams you have, they can be fortified with scripture. That's
mm-hmm.
going to help you get through this time. And either that or have a mentor. Have a buddy with you, you know, that you can bounce things off of one another. Have a supportive group with you. This can be done. The anger should not be associated as a constant component of single motherhood. Don't you agree, Samantha?
I agree, because it also leads to health problems.
Yes.
Being under intense stress and anger for a long period of time affects you physically. I'm a witness, because my life was so stressful at one time and so filled with anger that it literally started manifesting itself physically.
Mm-hmm.
And I had to slow down. I had to realize I can't keep going this way or else I'm going to die an early death.
Mm-hmm. And that's not good for my kids. So I have to do what I need to do in order to alleviate the anger and the stress so that I can be the best mom I can be for my children.
Yes. Anger is definitely not healthy. Anger does contribute to medical problems as far as heart disease, cancer, headaches, hypertension, depression. It causes accidents in the home. If you're angry, you're distracted, so you may trip and fall and hurt yourself. You may back out the driveway and have an accident because you're not paying attention.
Right.
Anger causes a lot of health malady. So it's very, very important that if you have that anger, you address it and do your very best to diminish it and curtail it by talking about these tips we talked about here tonight on this 90-minute show, which was really, really good. I really hope that these tips and this conversation tonight help some moms out there, because we, Van, Samantha, and myself, we are three single moms. We're living the life. So we can tell you, because we're right along with you as far as what's going on. And my book, Raising Princess to Be Kings, A Single Black Mother's Guide to Raising Her Black Son, I have a huge chapter in there about relationships and about your health and about your self-esteem and about socializing and about anger. Anger is very, very big. And you can visit my webpage at www.boldlioness.com. You can also email me at bolds, B-O-L-D-S, university, at yahoo.com. And my book is $23.95, and it's sold on my webpage at boldlioness.com. And I think you would definitely enjoy that, and it would be a wonderful holiday gift to a single mom that you know, because it is empowering. My book was written about my life. I lived it, I wrote it, and I'm hoping to share it and empower moms out there, because I am right there with you. Van, Samantha, and I, we are right there with you. So, Samantha, now, the holidays are quickly approaching. We have like maybe 2.5 weeks left, I think, before the big day. What should single moms do for 2010? To get ready for 2010, what should they do?
In general, set goals and determine that you're going to create your own circumstances, and also take inventory of what's happened in this year, 2009, and the years before, and discover what you want to do different so that your 2010 will be the best year for you. That's my biggest recommendation for single moms, and that's what I plan to do, setting new goals and trying to improve other areas of my life that I may have neglected over time, but understanding that being a whole person, well-balanced, is so important to have a satisfying and fulfilling life, and also to be the best example that I can for my children.
Well, I agree, you know, and for 2010, I'm going to do exactly what you just said. I'm going to take inventory of what didn't work for me in 2009, and I'm going to let it go. And I'm not afraid to let it go.
Yes.
You know, if it didn't work this year, I'm letting it go, and I'm going to try something different. I'm going to try something new. And also, too, I've decided to let go of some other things that I really don't have a problem letting go. Like television. I haven't had television now for the past 4 or 5 months in my home, and you know what? It's great because it freed me up to do other things that I need to get done. When the television's on, I'm going to sit there and I'm going to watch, and time is just going to go right by, and I won't be able to take care of my paperwork and my activities. I won't be as attentive. So you have to think about that as far as to get where you want to be. You may have to cut off your cable for a couple of months. You may have to make that sacrifice of not going out every Friday night until you can get to where you want to be, because what we are talking about here tonight is empowerment. It's about taking control and assessing yourself, looking at yourself and working on yourself. I know I said earlier it's not about the mom, but the mom does have to take a very healthy assessment of herself if she wants to be successful.
I agree. And in that same vein, I'm taking personal responsibilities for the reasons that she might be angry, the reasons she may be having difficulties and problems. a lot of times it's easy to project that anger out to other people when in actuality it may be something we're doing or not doing that's causing
right.
the anger. So that's really, really important. And then, like you said, forgive yourself for it. Okay, I was wrong. This course of action was not the best for me and my children. I accept it, I acknowledge it, and I forgive myself for what happened. And
self-forgiveness.
Yes, and then moving forward. It's always about moving forward in life.
Moving forward, Samantha. I mean moving forward to the point that you may not have the same friends. You may
exactly.
not eat the same food. You may not walk or drive the same route. You may not wear the same clothes. It's time to make that change. Shedding that anger is a layer-by-layer process, and
mm-hmm.
it sometimes means leaving people, activities, actions, food, things behind, because if that is contributing to the anger, it's got to go.
Exactly. It's got to go.
It's got to go.
And it'll be such a weight lifted off of your shoulders when you do that, and you'll be so much freer to love and accept other people just as you're accepting yourself.
Yes.
It's all
Absolutely.
Related.
Absolutely. This has been a wonderful show. We have about 4 minutes left. Samantha, could you just tell the listeners how they can reach you again, please?
You can reach me at richsinglemama.com. And it's M-O-M-M-A, not M-A-M-A, but richsinglemama.com. My community is community.richsinglemama.com. You can come there. You can join. You do have to sign up. It's free. But then when you do sign up, you have access to so many resources that are available. I also have the Single Mom Survival and Success Kit that's available on both the blog and the community. You can pick that up there. And if you like, if you have any questions about finance or setting goals, time management, you can email me at samantha@richsinglemama.com, and I'll be more than happy to talk with you, to answer your questions, and to offer more tips.
Yes. Now, Samantha is also found on Facebook
as well.
She's on Facebook. Yes. And Evangeline Biddy Junior Magazine is also on Facebook. I'm on Facebook under Raising Princes to Be Kings. I am a medical social worker with a master's degree, and if any mom out there has any questions or concerns or any suggestions on another show topic, please send me an email to bowlsuniversity@yahoo.com. We have some great new shows coming up in the following weeks. On 12/8, we have Black African-American Pregnancy in the United States. It's a Matter of Life or Death. I will be speaking with a director from the Black Infant Mortality Reduction Resource Center. We'll be talking about why is it our black babies are dying twice as fast as white babies in America. Very interesting show. Also coming up on the 13th for special education, I will be joining Samantha and Evangeline as we're having our guest, Jason Gilmore, and his wife. They made a wonderful documentary called IEP. And for parents out there who have special ed children in the education system in the United States, this show of 2 hours is going to be for you. So you can call in, you can ask questions. This is going to be a dynamic, dynamic show. On December 16th, we also will have another show on pregnancy, breastfeeding, and motherhood equals success. I will have a mom on along with the director from the Maternal Infant Network Services as we're going to be talking about the benefits of breastfeeding. So I thank you all so very, very much. Please, you can befriend me on Blog Talk Radio under Denise Bowles, MSW. You can put my show down as a favorite. You can put my show down as a favorite. You can send me messages. We would love to hear from you. And we're looking forward to the upcoming shows before the holiday because 2010 is going to be the year of single motherhood. Thank you so much again, Samantha, for coming on the show. I look forward to us hanging out again here on actually the 13th when we're going to be talking with the special ed show. So I hope you can join us for that.
I will, and I'm looking forward to it.
Excellent, excellent. So thank you very much. Did you have anything else to say before we go?
No, just single moms, go out there, make a plan, and live it.
Yes. Take control and get rid of the anger. The anger is holding you back from being the best dynamic single mom you can be. You can do this. We are here to support those single moms out there. We're here to help you with resources, encouragement, and knowledge because we live the life right along with you. So please, single moms, reach out to us. We are here for you, and we're here to empower you. Thank you so very, very much, and have a great evening.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.